Hey, it's Heather Monahan. I just sat with Ennis and I dropped so much knowledge behind the scenes and my top hacks that you need to listen to in 2021.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of I'm Made For More podcast. It's your host Ennis here, and today we have a very, very special guest. It's the one and only Heather Monahan. Heather's journey is so inspiring because it's one that starts from very humble beginnings in Worcester, Massachusetts. Growing up with a single mom, living in a trailer behind her grandparents' house, Heather was definitely not brought up with a silver spoon in her mouth. In fact, her and her family had to rely on food stamps from time to time. Now, despite the cards she was dealt, she took full control of her destiny and wants the same for you. Today, Heather is a top 40 female keynote speaker, inspiring hundreds of thousands around the world. She's a best-selling author, a confidence coach, TEDx speaker, and host of a top podcast, Creating Confidence with Heather Monahan. In this interview, Heather and I will talk about how you can become confident and reach your full potential, how to become a great public speaker, as well as how to network like an all-star in 2021. Now, before we get into this goldmine of a convo, I want to thank you for your continued support. If you're enjoying these interviews, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. I'd love to see your feedback there. Now, without further ado, enjoy this incredible interview with the boss in heels herself, Heather Monahan.
Heather, thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So the first question I like to ask is, if there's one topic or concept that you could teach the whole world relating to either life or business, what concept would that be?
You know, probably that sales is applicable to everybody and that everyone is in sales. And the more you start embracing selling and asking, the more successful you'll be in life.
I love that. And I totally agree. I think sales is probably one of the most important skills to have in life in general. I mean, whether you realize it or not, like you said, you know, you're selling yourself. But Heather, I want to get into your mission of empowering people to be confident so they can reach their full potential, right? At what point in your career did you decide that that's going to be your life's mission?
You know, it was sort of, first of all, I wouldn't say it's my life's mission, but I would say I wrote a book about it, right? So I got fired a little over 3 years ago now, and I took that opportunity to write and self-publish my first book, Confidence Creator, and that's really when I dove into that.
Awesome. What does confidence mean to you?
You know, confidence is that you can walk into any room and not be concerned what other people think of you. You can show up as your real you, share your opinions, and not be concerned with what others, you know, feedback may be around it.
Totally. What are some signs of, you know, a confident person versus an insecure person?
Well, insecure people either want to appear perfect, so they pretend they know all the answers, or, you know, pretend that everything is going perfectly in their life. Confident people are happy to admit that they have flaws, happy to, you know, explain where, oh, I don't know how to do that, or wow, I never saw that. That's impressive that you can do that. I could never do that. You know, just be more real and honest is a more confident trait.
Interesting. On the flip side, you know, what do you think can destroy someone's confidence?
Well, there's a lot of things that can, you know, any type of massive life change, like when the pandemic hit and a lot of us lost revenue, you know, that really takes a big hit at your confidence when you're saying, wow, I was paying my bills by doing speaking engagements on site and those just disappeared. I don't feel so confident in my livelihood right now. I don't feel confident in my surroundings, right? So there's so many different things that can happen outside of you. And a lot of what I talk about is trying to figure out ways to ensure you have confidence within you so that you can navigate and survive during those difficult times.
Yeah. And how has that been for you? Because like you mentioned, speaking engagements were like a high source of revenue for you. So how have you been able to adapt with the whole pandemic and you know, losing that stream of revenue?
Yeah, that's been really hard. One of the things that I did, well, obviously I've moved to virtual speaking, which really took off about a month or 2 months into the pandemic. But at first I didn't know that was going to happen. And second, they don't pay as much as the on-site events did. So there's still a reduction there. So that helped a lot that people were able to put, you know, the virtual events on. But then you wonder, will I connect virtually, right? You have to prove yourself. And I had to go out and you know, do money back guarantees on my virtual speaking events until I felt confident that, you know what, these are going to be great and I can get it done. And then the other thing I did to supplement revenue was I went back to my DMs to look at what people asked me for prior to the pandemic. And people asked me a lot about, do you do coaching? Do you do executive coaching? Do you consult? So I launched my first ever executive coaching program during the pandemic, and I still have that going now.
That is awesome. So I want to take a step back. I want to talk about your childhood for a second. Can you take us back? I know you grew up in, you pronounce it Worcester, Massachusetts? Is that right?
Worcester, yeah.
Worcester. All right, with a single mom and three siblings. What was it like growing up in that sort of environment? Can you paint us a picture?
I mean, it's like anything. Whenever you're in it, that's all you know, right? So it's not like it's good or bad. It just is. So it just, you know, we struggled financially. My mom worked three jobs. She was gone all the time. So my siblings and I had a lot of time on our own, you know, at the house and with a lot of freedom, which was crazy, you know, but again, it was all that we knew. And we found a way to make it work.
And what were you like, you know, growing up? Were you one of the popular kids in school? You know, were you a good student? Were you a class clown? What was it?
I was really big into athletics, into sports. That was my saving grace growing up, is that I played softball. I played basketball. I played volleyball. I was always running. You know, I was very much into movement teams and leading teams. So that really was a core fundamental of success for me still to this day, that, you know, I rely on as all the learnings from being a part of a team. And that really saved me as a kid too.
And did you always have that hunger to like succeed? Because I'm trying to like figure out at what point in your, you know, childhood, like, did you get that entrepreneurial bug? Did you always dream of being an entrepreneur?
No, I never, you know, when I was younger, I'm 46. So when I was young, it wasn't sexy or popular to be an entrepreneur. I didn't even know what one was back then. What was popular was becoming a CEO of a company, leading, you know, a publicly traded company, more traditional roles. And so that's what I always aspired to do, was that I wanted to move up the corporate ladder and I wanted to become a CEO and, you know, lead a Fortune 500 company. So entrepreneurial was not even on my radar.
So I want to fast forward over to college. I know you went to Clark University as a psychology major. And then out of college, you got a job as a salesperson in the wine business. You know, were you a natural at sales? You know, why did you choose sales?
Well, I had worked as, I had a paper route when I was young, like 9 or 10. And then I started bussing tables at diners and then working at fast food restaurants and then waiting tables and then bartending all through college. And really what that did was that really gave me a solid foundation of sales experience, whether I knew it or not. You know, I was learning how to deliver great customer service. I was learning how to renew clientele. I was learning how to upsell people. I was learning how to deal with difficult situations and difficult conversations and really interact and interface with people. So I was very well positioned to do great in sales when I finally got my first sales job. But, you know, in theory, I'd been in sales since I was 9 or 10 years old.
Wow. Yeah. I read somewhere in your book that you mentioned that out of college, you actually felt really lost and you didn't know what career path to kind of take after you graduated. How did you know that you were on the right track? What were some signs that, you know, you were on the right track when you got that job? And what advice do you have for someone in that place who doesn't know what their true passion is or what you mentioned in your book, like your superpower is?
I didn't know either, right? I had no idea. I just knew I needed to pay my bills. So that was good enough for me, is that, oh, I'm getting, you know, good money here. Okay, great. So I had no idea. And I wasn't thinking big picture, like, oh, what is my passion in life? And is this what I'm meant to be doing? I didn't know. And so I just kind of accepted not knowing and said, but one thing, if I keep moving forward, I'll start figuring things out. That's what I figured. And I was right. You know, just, you need to, the more you immerse yourself in different experiences, different companies, different industries, meet different people, you'll start to learn. And that future will start taking shape for you as long as you listen to your inner voice and, you know, move towards what makes sense for you.
Okay. Great advice. Okay. So you took on multiple jobs after that before landing a job at Beasley Media Group. And you were there for 14 years. You worked your way up to become the CRO. You were recognized as one of the 40 most influential women in radio at the time. And everything seemed to be going well. And then July of 2017, as you were on a business trip, you received an email from your then new CEO saying that she wanted to meet with you. Did that meeting end well?
Yeah, I did. I fired my villain that day, you know? So for me, she had previously been the CFO. I was a CRO and she'd always hated me. She was very, very jealous. And I knew it, but I just thought if I ignore it, you know, maybe she'll go away. But ignoring her was not the answer. You know, it just allowed her to step into more power, ultimately become the CEO. She was very threatened by me and she fired me right away. So that gave me the opportunity to say, what do I want to do now? If I'm going to go start over somewhere from ground zero, why not roll the dice on me?
Yeah. So why didn't you, you know, maybe take on another role, like an executive role at another company, you know, well paying? And why did you end up wanting to become an entrepreneur and being your own boss?
When I signed on and accepted the position as CRO, I also signed a non-compete, non-solicit for a year and a half that if at any time I leave the company for any reason, I could not compete in the industry that I had made a name for myself. So I knew legally I could not go back to work where I had the expertise and where I had the experience. So if I was going to start over in, you know, the aviation business, I was going to start the, you know, without experience. And I knew if I was going to start over in whatever business, I was starting from ground zero. And it just made me think, if I'm going to start at the beginning, why don't I just chance it on me and see what happens?
Yeah, if you don't mind me asking, how much money were you making at the time as a chief revenue officer?
I was making about $500,000 a year.
Wow. So to go from $500,000 to uncertainty, that must have been really scary, wasn't it?
For sure. The unknown's always scary, right? I thought that for sure I had this well-lit path in front of me and my next move would be CEO. And, you know, I'd continue to grow my income and you know, leverage my talents and my expertise. And instead it was saying, okay, I'm walking away from that. Where do I go from here? And at first it was very, very scary, but like anything, even just like when I graduated college, you have to keep moving forward, keep taking action, keep leaning into your talents, keep listening to your inner voice. And the more you do that, the more you start to move towards where you're meant to be.
Totally. Do you remember the day, you know, after you had gotten fired? What was that like?
Awful. The first 24 hours were really bad, but then I did something very smart. I posted online before this, a year before this, before I got fired, I had launched a personal brand. That's essentially why I got fired. But she didn't like that. And thank goodness I did that because I built up a community on social media that I was connected with. Well, when I got fired, I posted, I've just been fired. After 14 years, if I've ever done anything to help you, I need to hear from you today. I'm really hurting. And I heard from thousands and thousands of people that post went viral. And I had so many opportunities that came to me. And that was the best thing I did. People would say, oh, that looks terrible. You got fired. And I thought, you know what? I'm not a bad person because someone bad fired me. That doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't mean I'm not great at my job. It means that person didn't want me there. So I didn't feel bad about it. And I've really attempted to reframe for other people. Getting fired doesn't mean you're bad. It means you weren't in the right situation.
That's the right mindset to have, especially today in these, you know, unprecedented times. Something I really like that you said in your book, Confidence Creators, that everyone's story has a villain. You mentioned this earlier too. There are those who support you and those who drag you down, right? And you had your fair share of villains, obviously, in your life. How do you deal with the haters in general and toxic people in your life? And as you leveled up in life and business, do you feel the target on your back has gotten smaller?
The target's much bigger now, right? The more people you reach, the more people you're going to upset. And so I get a lot of crazy messages. And I typically my go-to is I ignore, delete and ignore. I'm not even going to waste my time. But every once in a while, I will call something out. And I had a woman who messaged at my website. I have a bot on my site that you can speak to get messages to me. And the woman sent a note and said, hey, I'm a huge fan. And you know, blah, blah, blah. And then she went on to say, however, you know, you don't wear enough clothes and you need to cover up more. And the pictures and images are really hurting us other women. And I really need you to start dressing more appropriately. I have no idea who this lady is. And I found that to be very comical. So instead of responding to her, I went to social media and I posted about what she wrote to me. And I just said, listen, Miss, I don't know who you are. I don't know how you dress, but I'm not really concerned. You do you and I'll do me. And that was it. And it was funny because, you know, obviously people deal with this, whether it be, oh, you should cut your hair, or you shouldn't wear glasses and get contacts, or you should lose weight, or you should do this. You know, the whole world will tell you what you should or shouldn't do, but it's up to you to be you and not be bothered by somebody else's opinion of you.
Totally. I think anyone who has the time to like go out of their way to write something negative on somebody's post, like they're just not happy with themselves. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah. So, another thing that I thought was super interesting, because obviously you're super successful now, is you weren't always a confident person. And something you said that I, you know, totally resonate with is nobody's confident all the time, right? So how do you go from not being confident, you know, being afraid to raise your hand and speak up at meetings, to becoming a TEDx speaker and the great public speaker you are today?
Well, speaking specifically takes repetition. You know, I spoke in corporate America for 20 years, and that's what I think a lot of people forget. They see me from the last 3 years and think, oh, wow, she became an amazing speaker in 3 years. No, that is not true. And I want to dispel that for people, because that would be cheating. That's not real. For 20 years, I was giving speeches. I wasn't getting paid for them. It was part of my job. But every week I would at least do a sales meeting for a few hundred people. And then I would go to conferences and speak in front of thousands of people. And it was part of my job. And it was something that I was good at and didn't understand you could make money from. But I do want people to know that for sure, speaking is really about practice. You need to get up there and keep speaking more and more, and you will get better and better. It's just practice. And that creates confidence in itself. But some other things just in general, you know, fire your villains is one of the most important things. You're not going to be confident if you're around negative people trying to hold you back and pull you down. Pick people who are ahead of you that will challenge you to grow and just go bigger. The more you step into fear, the more confident you'll become, and the more you'll see that stepping into fear is actually the answer. It makes you realize that fear isn't there. Fear is a green light that actually means go. So, you know, fire your villains, start listening to your inner voice, journal so you can understand who you really are, go back and reflect upon the things that you say and write when you're alone, because that's the real you, and start acting on those things. If you say, wow, I notice I don't feel so great after I leave lunch with so-and-so, stop having lunch with so-and-so. The other thing is, you know, most of us spend the majority of our time at work. So you need to do some deep digging here on how do you really feel about what you're doing? Is it purpose-driven? Are you excited every day? If you're not, pick your head up out of that industry, out of that company, out of that team, and say, what else is out there? Because if you are a painter and you're artistic and creative, you are never going to be happy sitting at a computer being a CPA. So you're going to lose your confidence because you're selling yourself short, and that will start eroding and seeping into all different areas of your life. So the more you step into the real you, saying, you know what, world, I'm not a CPA, I'm an artist, and I'm going to roll the dice on me, that will build confidence in you.
Oh, for sure. And I want to touch on something you just talked about. You know, how has journaling made an impact on your career so far? And how often do you journal?
So earlier in my life, I used to journal every single day. But now, since I've gone off on my own, I keep a Word doc that I just jot notes in. I don't do as much writing as I used to because I just wrote another book and I'm doing a lot of writing professionally now instead. So what I would say is journaling taught me, when I went back and reflected, number one is that I'm a lot stronger than I think I am, right? So you go back and see these different moments. For me, 08, 09 was a terrible time in business. And when I go back and read those journals and see how I got through that, that gives me strength for today and getting through a pandemic, right? So your past fails, your past challenging moments really are proof for you to go back and revisit to say, I can get through what I'm dealing with now. The other thing is you'll have realizations. You'll see patterns. For me, a pattern that I started noticing when I would read through these old journals was I would never raise my hand if I wanted something. I was at a conference a few years back and I wanted to be a keynote speaker there, but I never asked the guy. And I knew the guy who was in charge of the conference. I had known him socially. He was in my network. I went to all of his events, but I never said, hey, I want to be a speaker here. And so what I ended up doing was speaking at a conference he happened to attend. He texted me during the event, which I didn't know, saying, oh my gosh, you're an amazing speaker, Heather. Great job. I got back to my hotel room. I saw the note and I said, okay, now I'm going to ask. And I sent him an email and I asked. He didn't let me speak that year, but he put me on the next year and it went great. And looking through at that whole situation and domino effect of me not raising my hand and not asking for what I wanted just made me realize if it was happening in that situation, I guarantee it's happening other places in my life. And so I started noticing oh, I want to do that. Oh, I should pull back. Maybe they're going to say no. Maybe they won't want me. And started forcing myself when I would feel that, you know what? I knew I should have asked for that stage a long time ago. I'm going to ask for whatever this one is now.
So what I'm hearing is there's opportunities all around us. We just have to obviously look for them and then ask, right?
Yeah, nothing's going to happen unless you ask, for sure.
So another thing that I want to ask you is, what are some, you know, public speaking do's and don'ts? What are some tips and tricks?
Yeah. Well, first of all, anytime you can go to the venue first, and if you're just doing virtual speaking, then go to the virtual platform first, not on the day, ahead of time. You want to run through, like I had to learn, wow, make sure you have extra cords when you're doing virtual speaking. What if, you know, you knock a cord over and it's broken and your computer starts dying, you'd be screwed. So you learn little things by going and visiting the platform, go to the location, put yourself physically, mentally in that arena or opportunity ahead of time. I went to my TEDx where I was going to speak 2 weeks prior to actually giving my speech. I walked around, I took pictures, I saw myself on the stage. You really want to immerse yourself ahead of time to help yourself prepare and get calm and centered. I also highly suggest leading with a personal story. People are captivated by your story. People want to know something about you and you want to garner their attention very quickly. You don't want to start a speech with, I'd like to start with reading the annual numbers from 2020. And then after that, we're going to go to, everyone's going to tune out. No one's going to listen to you. So start with something captivating, a funny joke, a personal story, something to grab attention. I also, if you're in a work environment and, you know, it's not thousands of people, but maybe it's 100 or 200 people and it's people you work with, I would call people out. And I did this all throughout my career. And it's very funny because people begin to expect it. And so they're on their toes waiting. Oh, what, is she going to call on me? What's going to happen? And, you know, sometimes you can do it funny. I was a last speaker for an event years ago in corporate America, and it was a Friday. Everyone wanted to get out of there and go to happy hour. And I knew it. So I led my speech with that. I said, all right, how many people here wish I wasn't speaking and they wish they were at the bar? And people start going crazy, right? So you just be your authentic, true self. If you're funny, tell flipping jokes. If you almost fall over because your heel gets stuck on the stage, which has happened to me 3 times, make a joke about it. Ooh, that was close. I almost face planted in front of you all. Have you guys ever seen a speaker face plant, right? So just be you. And the more natural you that you can be, the more the audience connects to that. The other thing is, take the pressure off of yourself. You don't need to be perfect. No one's perfect. And the reality is people probably aren't paying that much attention. I wish people would pay more attention to my talks and, you know, and go view my speeches, but they don't. So you have to see that people are more concerned with what are they having for dinner tonight? How are they going to pay their bills? Is their kid sick, right? They're concerned about them. But we oftentimes get on a stage, whether it be Zoom or otherwise, and project that everyone's so caught up in us. They're not. And when you take that pressure off to say, you know what, I can just show up as me, just like everybody else out there, they'll actually connect to me more than me pretending I have to be so, so perfect.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is address the elephant in the room.
Oh, we always. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I always do that when I'm speaking for a virtual event and there are a lot of speakers back to back. I always say, all right, can I just call this out, you guys? I am so flipping over Zoom, you know, because you want to be like, I'm sure if you've been sitting somewhere for 6 hours in front of your computer, you are too, right? Who's with me on this one? Definitely call out what everybody's thinking.
I love it. All right, so I want to talk about networking, but before that, I want to talk about your Steve Harvey experience. How did you prepare for like being on a stage like that? I know you mentioned that, you know, you go in 2 weeks before, but like on a show, a live show like that, with that huge audience, how do you prepare for something like that? And were you nervous at all? Because you didn't seem like it when I was watching it.
Well, at that point in time, my book had already come out. So I had been on CNN, you know, I had been on a lot of press, USA Today. Like, I've done tons of interviews. So again, that wasn't my first interview. And that's so important for people to know. If you look back at my first interview years ago, probably 4 years ago, I bet it was on local Miami CW, you know, a really tiny place, closed. There was no audience, right? Like, I started small and then over a few years started getting bigger opportunities. And then I just, even though I'd get scared, I went to Yahoo and they were doing this live finance thing and they wanted me on it. And I thought, oh my God, I'll go. I said, I'll go because I'm scared. And I know the more I step into fear, the more I have an opportunity to grow. But once I did that, I thought, you know what, that went great. Okay, I can do the next thing. And then when the Steve Harvey thing comes up, you're saying, you know what, I can do that too. What was different, Steve Harvey's team did an amazing job ahead of time. I think we had three preliminary calls. So the first one, they want to hear all of your thoughts on different topics. Then they go meet with their team. Then they come back and they do another one with, here's potential topics we're going to talk about on the show. You know, here's five possible things. Then they do one where they bring all the people on, like all the guests that were going to be on, so that you can at least, you know, have some level of banter. So they did a really good job introducing the concept, the show ahead of time. They did the pre-work that makes the actual event look really good. So I think that was really positive. And most shows that I've been on never do Hallmark Channel that I've been on a ton of times. They don't really do any, like, you just say, oh, I could talk about this. And they're like, all right, great. And, you know, when you go in and listen, sometimes those work out amazing because you just have great chemistry with people and conversation. But it was helpful, I thought, with the Steve Harvey show that they did a lot of pre-work. And then that day, anytime I'm really nervous, I want to tap someone that I love. I want to have a cheerleader with me because that just makes you feel safe and loved and, you know, that there's someone, you're not alone. And so one of my best friends was supposed to come to the filming. She couldn't come. She had to cancel the last minute.
Uh-oh.
So I'm good. I'm friends with, I have other friends out there in LA. So I have a friend who's my makeup artist. And I said, is there any way you'll come with me? And she said, of course I will. And so it was great because I had this good person that I knew was cheering me on, that I knew was behind the scenes with me, holding my hand, you know? So when I felt a little nervous walking out there, she was there to say, no, come on, you remember, you got this. And sometimes that's the only little push you need.
Aside from having someone close to you, whether that's a friend or family member, do you have like a ritual before you hit a routine, right? Before you hit that, like a big stage like that? What's that look like?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, the biggest thing for me is that, well, number one, I exercise and I exercise a lot because that gets rid of anxiety or stress that I might be having. If I'm really freaking out, I do something called tapping, which I think I did this for the Steve Harvey one. I haven't done it in a long time, but tapping is a way to get rid of any type of anxiety out of your body to just get you calm and centered. I always use lavender if I'm nervous as a scent to smell because it reminds me, okay, everything's going to be fine. You're zen. Don't worry. I'll look through like a list of the top three things I'm really proud of at the moment and say, oh, I killed that. Oops, I killed that one. Oops, I killed that one. So it just reminds me, this is proof you did really well with these three. Why wouldn't you do well with this one too, right? So I'm speaking to myself as my own cheerleader, reminding myself of my accomplishments, looking at my own highlight reel and saying, oh my gosh, this is why they asked you to be here. Oh, they want you here. Oh yeah, that's right. You know, so I remind myself of that. But the most important thing I do for anything big is I have a playlist that I only listen to right before I'm going on to a big stage, a huge opportunity. And it is the only time I use that playlist. So the minute I start hearing it, my mind goes to a very different place and it immediately laser focuses in on, holy cow, you're about to take another stage and you are about to crush this kid. Let's go. And I really quickly pivot from this feeling of I'm scared, I'm a little afraid to I'm excited.
Wow. Okay. I'm definitely going to look back or look at this recording and listen to that because you dropped some gems in there for sure. So another topic I really want to talk to you about is networking. I mean, you have a whole chapter dedicated in your book. It's called How to Network Like an All-Star. So first of all, how has building a powerful network, you know, impacted your career?
You know, gosh, I'd have to say that's one of the top things. And someone just brought it to my attention the other day. It's funny when you're going through life and you're younger, you don't realize you're doing it. But for some, it wasn't strategic, I guess is what I mean. When I was younger and I was traveling for business, I would just always make contacts and I'd follow up with them or I'd say, oh, I'm going to be in town. Can we meet for dinner? Or, you know, and take an interest in people. And that was a genuine interest. It wasn't malicious. But what I was doing was I was connecting all of these dots together around the country so that someone would be thinking of me in New York and say, oh, there's an opportunity for Heather here and call me and reach out. And then I'd pay that same favor back to them and someone they knew and connect them to someone. And slowly it really became apparent when I got fired is that my network was critical to my success then and now today. So much so, some people that I've only met in the last couple of years in this new world have bent over backwards to help me, get me speaking engagements, get me an agent, connect me to this one or that one. And it's been priceless. I mean, you can't put a price tag on people that care about you, that are willing to help you, that you help.
Totally. And it's like your network is your net worth, right? And it's all about providing value for each other, right? It's not like a one-way street.
Oh, yeah, because then your network would crumble very quickly.
Exactly. Can you share some of the tips, you know, you've picked up, you know, so far over the years to network like a boss?
Do nice things, right? So I got Jesse Itzler to come on my show. And when I went to his house, I had this recording device I brought with me. And as soon as I pulled it out, he said, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Where did you get that? You know, he was super interested. So I made a mental note. Okay, after I leave here, I am buying him one of these and shipping it to his house, right? Do nice things for people. And so he sent me back the nicest note. So now if I message Jesse and say, hey, I was wondering, like, could you help me out with this? I'm sure he'd be like, oh, that's Heather. Heather sent me this cute gift that I really wanted and I'm excited about. Then I had Chris Voss on my show, and I asked him, I said, would you be willing to come do this live event with me? And he said, yeah, for sure, I'll do it. And after he did it, I sent him a bottle of the whiskey that he drinks. And we had dinner when he was in town. I made a mental note of what he drank. And so I thought to myself, you know, if I ever want to thank him for something, that's how I can do it. Then, you know, I had Amy Morin on my show, and she called me one day and said, I don't know, should I launch a podcast? And I said, if you don't launch a podcast, I am going to kill you. You need to launch a podcast. And then I would keep following up with her. Like, you can do little things to show people I'm vested in you. I'm interested in you. I want you to do well. I'm cheerleading for you. You don't always have to send a gift. You can just send your accountability or send your encouragement to people or make a connection for someone to say, you know what? Wow, you need another good speaker. I've got someone great. Let me connect you to Amy.
Wow. I love that. You just dropped some gold right there. You know, what are some mistakes people make when they're networking?
They make it all about them. I had someone, this was so ridiculous the other day, someone sent me an email who I don't know well. I'd been on the person's podcast. I don't know them well at all. I've never met them in person, nothing. Sent me an email. Hey, Heather, happy new year. Hope your year's off to a great start. Listen, we were looking for some new guests. I went through your roster and saw you had Gary Vaynerchuk and Sarah Blakely. Can you send me their contact info? That was so bad, right? Who is he kidding? That was really bad. So I wrote back to him. I said, well, I can tell you how I got Gary Vaynerchuk. I said, I had been stalking him for years, probably four, maybe 5 years, DMing back and forth, trying to find ways for a connection point. Then I took a Google alert out on his name. He launched a new business with a partner. I said, I bet I can find the partner. I tracked the partner down on LinkedIn. I DM'd the partner. He wrote me back. I said, hey, did you just launch a wine business? He said, I did. I said, you're not going to believe this. Guess what? I was a top seller for the Gallo Winery. I have so many tips and tricks for you in the wine business. Would you give me a 15-minute call? I'll help you. I will give you the dirt on the industry. I will give you so many things that are going to save you money and sell more cases. He's like, yeah, sure. We get on a call. I gave him all the landscape, every contact I had, anything I knew about it. And he's like, Heather, how can I repay you for this? I said, if there's any chance you can get Gary for my show, it would mean the world to me. So I'm like, buddy, I didn't email someone and say, oh, hey, give me Gary Vaynerchuk's contact. Like, you have to hustle and work for things.
Yeah. Why do you think this is super interesting to me, this topic? Because I've experienced this as well. Like, why do people feel like they're entitled to, you know, someone's network or whatever it is without even providing any value?
They're not. I mean, I don't care what if they think that they are. That's on them. Good for go find it somewhere else then, because you're not. And here's the thing. I guard people in my network. I protect them because I know they don't want everyone in the city knocking on their door. Someone messaged me the other day. Hey, can you give me your literary agent's contact info? No. She'd kill me. Like, then she'll be mad at me because she doesn't want everyone knocking on her door. Right. Yeah. So I write back to them. I can tell you how I got an agent, and then you can go about it the same way. I Googled, who is Rachel Hollis's agent? Then I Googled her agent. Then I went to her website. Then I wrote out a whole pitch. Then I called the woman. Like, people, go do the work. You have to show that you're actually vested in trying. And that's when people take you seriously. They're not going to take you seriously if you just send a note, hey, got your contact info from Heather. Can we jump on a call?
Yeah, it's gonna make whoever's introducing it really look bad, and that relationship's gonna suffer, because if you're just introducing everybody and connecting everybody, it's just not gonna work out. Totally agree.
No, there's gotta be a value point that you see. I have a friend who's the ultimate connector, but he always thinks, is there value on both sides of this? Can both of these people help one another? And if he thinks, you know what, I think there is, then he sets the introduction up that way. hey, Heather, I wanted to introduce you to my friend, Kate. She owns Luminary. I thought she might have some ideas for you on speaking engagements. Kate, Heather actually has a podcast. I know you've got a great story. I bet Heather would love to have you on her show. Like, there was a way each of us could help each other. And it made a lot of sense to bring us together. Connections like that are great.
Yeah. And giving without, you know, expecting that you're going to return anything is also super important.
Yeah. You have to go in that saying, hey, I might not get anything back, but I'm just going to keep pay it forward, keep doing good, and good will come back to me someday.
Totally. So another question I wanted to ask is, how are you networking, you know, during the pandemic and, you know, in this virtual world that we're living in?
Yeah. I mean, it's not ideal, right? There is nothing that will ever replace in face, you know, person to person.
You don't think so?
Communication. I haven't seen it yet. If it's going to be invented, no one's shown it to me, right? Zoom does not cut it. It just doesn't. So, I mean, it's better than nothing. So I'll take it, right? It's what I use right now. But I've only had a handful of in-person meetings since the pandemic happened. And one of them was this past week. It was amazing to actually be in someone's energy field and like really feel and see who they are beyond a computer screen. And I do definitely miss that. However, the one good thing is social media gives us a chance to like send DMs to people, congratulate them. If you don't know them, you know, that's what I use now other than the Zoom events. It's definitely social media and DMing people.
Well, there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you did, please take a minute and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. I'd love to see your feedback there. And until the next time, dream big, because you, my friend, are made for more.